This is American Dissident Voices. This is a program speaking for Americans who believe in freedom rather than in political correctness, who value quality above equality, and are willing to do whatever must be done to restore America to racial and moral health and her public institutions to sanity and integrity. This is a program speaking for Americans who dissent from the United States government's policies of multiculturalism and enforced diversity and globalism. This program is the voice of America's dissidents who are speaking out to America's patriots and to patriots of our Western civilization around the world in order that we may learn together and work together for a better future for us all.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Today we welcome back the director of the Institute for Historical Review, Mr. Mark Weber, for the second part of our discussion of Holocaust remembrance and Jewish supremacism. Mark, it seems that since the 1970s, the Holocaust has actually become an integral facet of Jewish identity, of how they define themselves as a people.
Right. It's really so much a part of the Jewish mindset that it's going to continue even regardless, I think, of the calculations of the utility of how advantageous it is. Several years ago, Abraham Foxman, who's national director of the Anti-Defamation League, he wrote this, and this was in the ADL's own bulletin called ADL on the Frontline. He wrote, "The Holocaust is something different. It is a singular event. It is not simply one example of genocide, but a near successful attempt on the life of God's chosen children and thus on God himself. It is an event that is the antithesis of creation as recorded in the Bible, and like its direct opposite, which is relived weekly with the Sabbath and yearly with the Torah, it must be remembered from generation to generation." Unquote. I mean, what it underscores here is that the powerful interests that Jews have, ethnic interests, collective group interests, are reinforced, and this is unique, reinforced with a special religious fervor. The religious views of most other people in the world are essentially universal in nature. Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, and so forth have a universal ethic to them, and the religion is open to everyone. The Jewish religion is not. It's an ethnically based religion. It's based upon what Jews regard as a special covenant or deal between themselves and God. And having one's ethnic interests and one's religious views harnessed together to the same purpose in the same direction is a very powerful thing. And when Abraham Foxman talks that way, he really thinks that hammering away on the Holocaust is almost has a mandate from God.
Referring to Jewish people being attacked as an assault on God himself, that really doesn't sound like he's saying it for our consumption. It sounds like he really believes that.
That's right. And it's written, as I said, this was in the ADL's own bulletin. It's called ADL on the Frontline in the January 1994 issue. You know, we're accused a lot of so-called rewriting history. They say that we rewrite history. Well, that's really absurd. I mean, the point of the IHR is to be as truthful and objective about history, and especially about official or dogmatic history. But the Holocaust is one of the very best examples I know of how history is really, as it were, rewritten in society at large. Several years ago, Michael Barenbaum, who was a project director of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum and a theology professor at Georgetown University, himself Jewish, he said this. He said, quote, "The Holocaust was once regarded as a side story of the much larger story of World War II. Now one thinks of World War II as a background story and the Holocaust as a foreground story."
Exactly.
I mean, in fact, you know, the memoir, Winston Churchill wrote a four-volume history of the Second World War. Dwight Eisenhower published his own memoir of World War II. Charles de Gaulle, the French leader, also published a memoir of World War II. Nowhere in any of those memoirs, and even the one by Churchill, four volumes, and he was something of a historian, is there any mention of gas chambers. And there's only fleeting mention, really, of the fate of Jews in Europe during that time. Today, however, Americans are trained to believe that what happened to Jews in Europe during World War II was practically the central event of that period. It's typical, or it's a manifestation of the really very collectively self-centered view that many Jews have of history. But what's astonishing is the extent to which this particular Jewish view of history has found its way and found acceptance among non-Jews in our society. You know, it's right, it's very normal for any group to commemorate its own dead. But what's perverse is to try to get people who have no connection or only the most tenuous connection to feel the kind of empathy that one normally feels for one's own kind. It's like asking other families down the street to feel the same kind of emotion over the sickness or the death of a child in one's family. You know, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, something like 20 million Chinese civilians died during the Second World War. How many Americans know that, or much less care? Americans are trained to think almost reflexively and to care about the so-called 6 million Jews who were slaughtered, they say, during World War II. Well, these same people have not the foggiest idea how many people of any other group, any other nationality, any other collective died during the Second World War.
Including their own.
Including their own. And that's really just simply perverse. It's simply perverse.
Well, revisionism hasn't made a large enough impact on the American psyche, but were you aware that revisionism was mentioned in what will be tomorrow's editorial in the Tehran Times?
No, I wasn't, no.
Would you like me to read you a couple paragraphs?
Yes.
This is the Tehran Times editorial for January 26. Quote, "It was not long before a group of revisionist historians in the West began to question the claim that 6 million Jews were butchered by the Nazis and even asked whether the slaughter of 6 million Jews during World War II was possible or not. The revisionist historians have proven in two decades of study that if Hitler had carried out a systematic program to eradicate the Jews, it would have taken more time than the 6 years that the war lasted. They have also proven that such an act of ethnic cleansing through the use of the poison gas Zyklon B, as the Zionists claim, was not possible at the time. Norman J. Finkelstein, a Jewish professor at New York University, critical of Zionist policies, has called this claim the Holocaust industry, which is only meant to boost support for the government of Israel. Over the past several decades and since the event was questioned, Zionist propagandists have tried to substantiate this claim through various means. The Zionists are trying to revitalize an issue which has become discredited in the eyes of world public opinion by using the press, radio, television, the internet, and most importantly of all, cinema and the great filmmaking industry in Hollywood, since most of the significant players of this influential industry are Jews. The issue of the Holocaust and the anniversaries held for the event are only meant to promote the repressive policies of the Zionists. The declaration that 6 million Jews were killed in World War II is an exaggeration of the truth. Furthermore, the suffering and pains of a nation cannot justify their crimes against other nations. The issue of the Holocaust is only being highlighted to cover up Israel's crimes in Palestine." Close quote.
Well, I think it's an amazing editorial for its candor, but it's written by people who already start from the premise that they're not going to be deceived by a Jewish propaganda or Zionist propaganda. And when one starts with that assumption, when one looks at history with open eyes, then it's possible to write and think with much greater objectivity.
Well, they don't have a Jewish-controlled media at all in
right.
Iran, of course.
Right, right. And of course, for their own self-preservation, in fact, as a country, as a state, it's necessary to take a stand against Zionist power. And indeed, I think that's happening increasingly all over the world, that Zionist interests are fundamentally different than the interests of everyone else, despite all the efforts to make them seem identical with things like the Holocaust campaign that we witnessed. You know, the proof that the Holocaust is not looked at objectively, but is manipulated, is propagandized, is the fact that it's the only chapter of history that is protected judicially in a number of countries. It's a crime in Germany, in Switzerland, in France, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, and several other European countries to, as they say, deny or whitewash the Holocaust. Now, that's an absurd statement, because even statements that are factually true about the Holocaust can land a person in jail, or force a person in exile, or bring fines. A good example of that is that several years ago, David Irving, at a talk in Munich, made the point that the so-called gas chamber shown to the public at the Auschwitz I main camp is in fact a post-war reconstruction. It's a phony post-war reconstruction. That statement is in fact true, as even the Holocaust or the Auschwitz State Museum in Poland now concedes. But David Irving was nevertheless fined first 10,000 marks, and then the fine was increased, and then banned from the country for having made a statement that's in fact factually true. But it's the fact that this particular chapter of history, or this Holocaust story, this dogma, has to be and is protected in the way it is judicially, is itself evidence that it's not possible in Western society today to look at that chapter of history with the kind of objectivity, the kind of sobriety that normally we should look at history.
Well, I think it's an admission, too, that the claims, the Holocaust claims of the Jewish power structure can't stand that kind of scrutiny. At least it leads you to suspect that is true.
Right. Yeah, it's just about impossible to make headway, even about very simple things. For example, the 6 million figure is one that just about every serious historian, even Jewish historians, know is an exaggeration. Now, the extent of exaggeration is a matter of some discussion and dispute, but the 6 million figure is untenable, and I can give many examples why. But even to state that in our society is to run the risk of ruination of one's career, and in other countries to risk imprisonment or fines or being forced into exile.
Well, if you stated that 20 billion Jews had been killed during World War II, you probably wouldn't have any legal action taken against you.
Right, right. Well, just to bring it up to the present or make a comparison, there seems to be some evidence that one of the most notorious of the crimes attributed to Saddam Hussein, the gassing of Kurds, particularly in this one village, was either untrue or it might have been partly carried out by Iranians. It's a rather unclear thing. But if you say, well, wait a minute, I don't think this is quite the case, this is quite true, as you'll find quite a bit on the internet about that, nobody thinks that you're therefore denying denying that Saddam Hussein did bad things, or you're defending Saddam Hussein, or so forth. And it goes, the same thing is true when one talks about the American Civil War or the Vietnam War or any other great conflict in history. This is the one chapter of history that is treated in this specially protected, politically correct way.
Well, even when the numbers aren't questioned, even when the Jewish Holocaust is held to be true, but it is placed in a co-equal position with other genocides in history, some Jewish groups get quite upset. For example, in Illinois, Jewish groups are not happy about a new curriculum which replaces mandatory Holocaust studies with mandatory genocide studies, which mention the killings of non-Jews as well. These Jewish groups state that that minimizes the Holocaust.
Right. Well, it's an example, again, that for Jews, talking about Jewish suffering is not the same thing as talking about the suffering of any other people. When Abe Foxman thinks that killing Jews is like killing God, all sort of rational and reasonable and fair discussion might as well just go out the window. It's just impossible. And Jewish groups insist on this thing. It's almost as if the word Holocaust is a little trademark symbol next to it, and people should be very careful how they use it. But this thing can't go on forever. It's really it's an expression of Jewish power, and and the Holocaust will continue to play the role in our society it does as long as that power stays in place. But the distortion of history that's reflected and shown and manifest in the Holocaust campaign is just one part of the problem. We live in a society in which any view other than one that Jewish groups find acceptable about any chapter of history is simply not permitted. And there's many, many examples of that that I could give. But it isn't merely the distortion of this one chapter of history. It's a kind of systematic distortion of our entire history that one finds across the board, especially here in the United States.
In Germany last Friday, there was a little bit of defiance of the Holocaust dogma in the parliament in Saxony, where members of the National Democratic Party in Germany, the NPD, created a big sensation when I think it was 12 of its members walked out during a moment of silence for Holocaust victims in that parliament, and where they hold several seats. And then later the same day, one of their members openly referred to what happened to the innocent German people and other people of Dresden in 1945. And when he referred to the bombing of Dresden by the Allies as a, quote, Holocaust of bombs, close quote. He trespassed on that, as you say, trademarked word. Do you think that the members of the NPD are going to face legal troubles for these statements?
Well, it's interesting that it's harder and harder, I think, to punish people when they defy this taboo. It's getting harder and harder to uphold it, I think. Just the other week, leader of the National Front in France made a statement that the occupation of France by Germany during World War II was not so bad or not so horrific or not so oppressive, something like that. And there was talk of him being fined. And he might be. But it's harder and harder, I think, to keep this up. As I said, it's really a reflection of Jewish and Zionist power, and as that power becomes more and more under scrutiny, then our ability to speak openly about this chapter of history will become greater.
It's interesting, you were talking about the ceremonies at the United Nations. There was a report that Kofi Annan referred to this ceremony as an important event meant to remember, and this is a quote, the Jews and others who were murdered at Auschwitz. It's, you know, the Jews are one category mentioned first, and everybody else is just others. It's a reflection of the Jewish mindset, though, coming from a non-Jew.
Well, for Kofi Annan, actually, that's even not acceptable to most Jews, because Jews don't like to have the Holocaust even referred to, have it referred to any other group except Jews. What they'll say is the Holocaust was the extermination or the murder of Jews, and whatever happened to anyone else, that's not the Holocaust. So already Kofi Annan is sort of going, crossing the line a bit when he even talks that way.
By the way, a deputy defense secretary and leading warmonger for the war in Iraq, Paul Wolfowitz, also spoke at that UN ceremony.
Yeah, well, you know, it's pretty amazing. I mean, one of the main speaker at that ceremony was Elie Wiesel. I mean, Elie Wiesel is presented in our society because he's a, quote, Holocaust survivor, unquote, as a man whose words must be given very special attention. Elie Wiesel is no humanitarian. He's a man who is a very ardent and one-sided supporter of Israel and of Jewish and the Zionist interests. He said publicly that he refuses to condemn Israel for whatever it does, right from the outset. Israel for him doesn't come under the same scrutiny. But more to the point, you know, he's presented this man who has this great love for humanity, even though he wrote himself, quote, every Jew somewhere in his being should set apart a zone of hate, healthy, virile hate, for what the German personifies and for what persists in the German. To do otherwise would be a betrayal of the dead, unquote. Now, that's an open call for hatred. It's an open incitement to hatred. He's urging, calling upon fellow Jews to feel hate against Germans. Now, any German, of course, expressing anything like any sentiment even remotely like that, of course, risks imprisonment or fines or punishment. But Elie Wiesel is treated in the United Nations and the United States as this great paragon, this moral paragon, paragon of morality, in a way that's just really perverse.
Well, in this orgy of perversity that this Holocaust Memorial Day or week or month or year represents, what can rational thinking people who have a respect for the truth do to help their fellow citizens refocus and get a little more realistic perspective?
A few weeks ago, I got a call from a woman who was worried about the way that her children in grade school are inundated, are treated with this Holocaust propaganda. And she asked, well, what can I do? And I said, well, the distortion of history in our schools today is so systematic and so bad that to object to this or that particular statement is really an almost impossible task. In fact, the distortion is not so much because this or that statement is untrue as it is in the way that information is presented very selectively and in a very one-sided way. The important thing, I think, and what we all can do is keep in mind and tell other people that this campaign is an expression of power, that people are thinking. Most people look at the Holocaust exactly the way they're expected to, exactly the way the people who make these films, who make these ceremonies, want you to think. That is, you're supposed to feel guilty, you're supposed to feel very sympathetic to Israel and to Jewish interests. This is exactly what the goal is. And if you keep in mind from the outset that there's an agenda behind it, then you can be alert. You can be alert to countering it and to keep an open mind.
What is the IHR planning to do this year to bring consciousness of historical truth to more people?
We have some other events in the on the calendar, which I can't really go into now. But I urge everyone who's listening to check out the IHR website. The IHR is best known for dealing with the Holocaust story, but we deal with a great number of other issues as well. And there's a virtual library, I mean, a huge amount of information on the IHR site and on the sites that we have links to. And the best antidote I know of to the kind of distortion you'll get in high schools, grade schools, and in colleges is to go through what the material on the IHR website and related sites in a systematic way. And that's really, its very presence and the availability of all this is already an enormous step forward.
Well, thank you, Mark, for all the work you're doing. Thank you for the wonderful work you do at the IHR, for the events you organize, and also for your wonderful outreach and support on the Zundel case and for bringing that forward to the world. I appreciate it deeply, and I also thank you for being a marvelous guest on American Dissident Voices.
Thank you very much, Kevin. It's a pleasure, and I wish you well as well.
You are listening to American Dissident Voices, brought to you by National Vanguard Books. The new issue of National Vanguard Magazine, number 125, is now available for purchase from National Vanguard Books. Bulk copies of the magazine, 20 or more, are also available at up to 50% off the cover price. Many of our members and supporters sell these at flea markets, cultural events, and quite a number even distribute them regularly to newsstands at a tidy profit. National Vanguard Magazine is a publication of the highest quality in every sense of the word, one that you will be proud to show to your friends and associates. This issue, our 125th, contains the following important features. How you can help, an editorial by yours truly, Kevin Alfred Strom. National Vanguard is a collaborative effort, and every reader can contribute in a significant way to our success. The Assault on Art and Beauty. Josiah Nott looks at the biological and cultural reasons that make Jews tend to work against beauty and oppose all manifestations of beauty as we see it in the art of the West. The Sign Man, Ben Parker's fictional look at a man who changed the world, even though he seemed to have nothing. Seemed is the operative word in this case. Situation terminal but not serious. Columnist and wit Bob Whitaker on The Legal Background to Gay Marriage. Petty Tyrants, a look at what Canadian and American society may become as book burning and imprisonment without charge become a reality. And Both Sides Equal One Side, a comparison of communist sham elections with American sham elections. Postscripts by Revelo P. Oliver. In The Price of the Head, Revelo P. Oliver looks at an egregious case of corruption in the Academy. Corruption that contributed to the deaths of thousands of Americans and the betrayal of a sacred trust. Holocaust Commemoration, Part 2. Continued incisive analysis by Erman Vinson of the secular religion driven by Jewish ethnocentrism that is growing up around the Holocaust, and much, much more. You may subscribe or purchase individual or bulk copies of National Vanguard magazine at nationalvanguard.org or natvan.com. A 6-issue subscription is $22 in the U.S. One copy is $5 postpaid. In Canada, the subscription is $30, one copy $5, and elsewhere in the world, the subscription is $40, one copy $8. Write to National Vanguard Books, Box 330, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. That's National Vanguard Books, Box 330, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Or you may order online. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to keep on thinking free.
You have been listening to a presentation of American Dissident Voices. The program was sponsored as a public service by National Vanguard Books, America's foremost supplier of patriotic books and tapes. You may purchase a high-fidelity audio recording of this program or any earlier program for $12.95 postpaid. In ordering program tapes, be sure to mention the date and the subject of the program and the call letters of this radio station. For $2, we'll send you our newest 72-page illustrated catalog with descriptions and ordering information for more than 600 books and tapes of interest to patriots. Many of the items in the National Vanguard Books catalog are available nowhere else. Our mailing address is National Vanguard Books, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Please write that address down now, because you may not hear this program again on this station. The forces of political correctness do not believe in free speech, and they do not like this program. Our address again is National Vanguard Books, Post Office Box 90, that's 90, Hillsboro, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Visit us on the internet at www.natvan.com. That's spelled NATVAN.com. Or www.natall.com. That's spelled NATALL.com. These American Dissident Voices programs are sponsored by donations from listeners like yourself. Please send a donation today to help us keep these programs on the air. This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.